Welcome to And While London Burns, an operatic audio walk in three acts.
I'm in the platform office with James Marriott, who's produced an opera called And While London Burns, an opera about climate change that you can experience as an audio walk in the London Square Mile in the city. I took part in the walk. It was a magical experience. How did you choose the person to write the opera, and how did you choose the actors?
It really evolved out of conversations between John and I. I've been working on doing walks, guided walks in the City of London and the West End as well, on these issues since the year 2000. But they're all kind of intimate for small groups of 15 people. And John Jordan and I wanted to work together on something and on this. We evolved the idea of trying to make something which could be much more publicly available. And then we put an advert out for somebody to work with who would be a composer or a sound designer. That was great. We had a wonderful response, and we got a hold of a wonderful composer, sound designer, artist, Isa Suarez, and she's great and was fantastic to work with. And then through other connections we came upon Douglas Hodge, who's an actor, but he's also an environmental, he's kind of eco-activist in his part-time, so which is cool. That's why he wanted to do this. Through Isa's contacts we came across the soprano, Deborah Stoddart, and the clarinetist and the cellist. So it was great, and a whole web of people. In fact, this piece of work really has taken 15, 20 people to make. So there's quite a whole list of folks. I could list them all, or you could go to the credits on the website and have a look.
Have the actors all done the walk?
Some of them have, and some of them haven't. We wanted to walk them all on it, but some people didn't have enough time. And then others have done it afterwards.
I wondered, why an opera?
Created an opera because we wanted people to feel about the issue that we're exploring through the opera, which is climate change and the relationship of London to climate change.
We're going to walk together through the web of institutions that extract oil and gas from the ground, feeding the global economy, fueling our lives, releasing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. I will take you to fund managers, banks, insurance companies, lawyers, advertising agencies, and recruitment agencies. This web of companies I call the carbon web.
Because it's our understanding that there's plenty of things written about this, that we know the science, we know the economics, and we know the critique of companies, but it's very difficult to find spaces where we actually really feel about it. Again, it's maybe more of us are used to feeling things about climate change on a sort of fairly abstract level of ice sheets melting or...
I keep thinking about a photograph I saw yesterday in the paper of a polar bear's shriveled penis. Poor bastards lying there on melting ice caps, starving to death as their hunting grounds collapse into the sea. Not even being able to have a decent shag because their cocks have withered, marinated in our toxic soup for too long.
It's very rare that we feel it in relation to the immediate locality that we are living in, which is, in my case, in London. How is it that the city that I live in and depend upon and that sustains me, how is it that that's driving climate change? And to what we wanted to do through this opera was to get people to understand that a bit more, you know, not just to think about it, but feel about it. Somebody went to do a preview of the walk on Wednesday, and they dropped me an email and said it made me cry. I was very upset by it, but it strangely liberated, he said. For my money, that's a really great response, because we want people to feel about it. We want people to be moved by the issue. So that's why we commissioned an opera.
Do you think the opera is empowering? Do you think it empowers people?
Yes, yeah, as I say, I was really touched that this person wrote an article, an email back to me. They felt liberated by it and engaged by it, and I suppose that means the same in empowering. Sometimes we rush too quickly to false hopes, to little small things that we can do, and we're constantly encouraged that, you know, by changing our light bulbs we will be able to sort this problem out, or by being careful not to take the odd, you know, to take a flight or whatever, or sort this problem out. And I'm not saying that one shouldn't do those things, we shouldn't do those things, but also at the same time, I feel that it's useful for us to really try and inhabit the scale of what's happening, really take that on board. And that to some extent, is entering into a space of despair. But until we can really touch that feeling of the scale of what is happening and the scale of our implication of what's happening, I think it's very difficult. For me, I can't see that we can really break out of it. Otherwise, it'll be just a lot of window dressing. I'm not sure we can really sort out climate change, but we won't find a way of navigating it unless we really understand the degree to which we need to shift the direction of the ship, and that means radically, radically dropping all engagement in oil and gas.
I think politically, the window dressing is how politicians do manage things. They create something so people think they're participating whilst carrying on with business as usual.
It should come as no surprise when we realise just the scale, our engagement, you know, our dependency on oil and gas. We tend to get it characterised by our personal consumption use. So, you know, I need oil and gas because I need, you know, coal and electricity, because otherwise how could I get from A to B, or how could I have the plastic cup, or how could I fly to see my loved one or whatever. And that's kind of scary enough, that's overwhelming enough in a sense, but I think if you look at it not just at the end of the consumption, but at the end of it from the end of production, then we also understand just how much we're engaged in oil and gas. And that's, I think, what we try to explain in the opera, which is that all of us are engaged to some extent, not only in consuming oil and gas, but largely also in producing it. By that I mean it's not just the oil companies such as Shell or BP who are pulling oil out of the ground, but all the web of institutions that work around them that make that possible. They don't operate on their own. They operate in collaboration with and as part of a network of banks, advertising agencies, recruitment agencies, PR companies. All these institutions are engaged in driving forward the extraction of oil and gas, the constant extraction and the increasing extraction of hydrocarbons from beneath the surface of the earth. All of them are engaged. So if in any way you have any connection to a bank, if you've got a bank account, say for example in Royal Bank of Scotland, or your friend works in a PR company, or your relation works in a headhunting company, or your relation helps, you know, with property for banks or whatever. I mean, all of these institutions, you know, right across the board, they're all involved in this same process. Very, very large percentage of the economy of this city and the entire region in which it sits drives forward, is involved in driving forward oil and gas extraction from around the world. And I don't mean that just from a consumption end, but also from a production end. And we have to understand that scale.
So London is stage managing world consumption of oil and gas?
Absolutely. Totally. If we, you know, it's easier sometimes to see these things in retrospect. For example, we now understand that, you know, Manchester was one of the great cotton cities of the world. South Wales was one of the great coal mining areas of the world. It's very difficult for us to recognise, because we're so close up to it, that this is one of the great oil and gas extraction cities of the world. It's not written on their billboards. You don't see it. You don't see it in the way you see the coal mines in South Wales. But this is really where oil and gas is extracted from the ground. Not physically, obviously there aren't drilling rigs, but all the financing, all the logistics, all the organising is done very strongly through this city. It's more important than New York, more important than Houston. And we have to wake up and understand that. You know, if somebody said to you, what's a great oil city in the world, you kind of go, well, Dallas, Kuwait. But actually London is more importantly in that. And consequently, huge chunks of the economy of this city, you know, from sandwich shop runners, courier companies, is all dependent upon driving forward that oil and gas extraction. I believe we've got to understand that and feel it, because we need to find a way out of it, and we need to do that fast, if not now.
Some of the companies star in the opera. Which are some of the companies that star in your opera? What are the names of them?
Well, there's obviously starring role is played by BP, British Petroleum.
BP, the second largest oil company in the world, and the largest company in the UK, the driver of the world's oil economy. Its products emit twice the amount of carbon dioxide as all the citizens of the UK put together.
I think, well, there are two character leads, okay? I mean, in a sense, there are two different sets of casts which interact with each other. There's the protagonist, who's a fund manager from a company which you don't know the name of, and his girlfriend or fiancé who he's split up with, who works at Swiss Re, who is a climate scientist at Swiss Re. So these are the two kind of characters you follow through the whole piece for an hour. But they are set against the backdrop, the stage of the companies of the city. We try in the opera to characterise those companies. So we don't just talk about, you know, BP or Shell or Deutsche Bank, but we try and say, okay, these particular characters are in it. So we talk about, for example, like Adam Saminsky, who's the head of the oil and gas team in Deutsche Bank, or Steve Mills, who organised the loan from Royal Bank of Scotland to BP for a huge oil and gas pipeline in the Caucasus, and is the head of the oil and gas team at RBS. So these characters are very important to try and convey, and they play a role, as it were, in the event.
Did they mind?
I don't know yet. We shall see. I noticed that in the recent review we had in the paper, BP that chose to put in a comment of response to the opera. But this is BP's response to the opera, which is a BP spokesman said, since 1997, BP has publicly advocating precautionary action to address climate change, both by reducing the greenhouse gas emissions from our own operations and by developing cleaner products for our customers. Well, seeing as the person who wrote the article didn't actually respond to that quote, I'd like to take this opportunity on perhaps freer media than this one, which belongs to Mr. Murdoch, to respond to BP's quote. And what I would say is that it's very interesting, he says, since 1997, BP has publicly been advocating precautionary action to address climate change. However, they've been doing next to nothing to change their own situation, because let's understand this. They have been very publicly talking about the fact that they are a green company, putting a lot of money into advertising, talking about beyond petroleum. They've even poured money into their alternative energy arm. But the statistics are pretty damn clear. Over 97% of all their turnover is based in hydrocarbon, in terms of how much money that they're generating, the amount of money they're putting into their projects. It's all on oil and gas. BP produces twice as much carbon dioxide as the entire citizenry of the UK. Every single citizen of the UK, that's 60 million people, produces carbon dioxide. BP produces twice that 60 million. It's a key driver. So we hold up this country as being responsible in the Kyoto Principles for 2.3% of global carbon emissions. BP's own global carbon emissions are twice that of the UK. They're about 5%. Unfortunately, although it has been reducing the greenhouse gas emissions from its own operations, it's got a long way to go. And my view is this, which is that although it says in this view here, reducing the greenhouse gas emissions from our own operations, we need to unpack that for a moment and say, that's a bit like a sweet company saying, we've decided that no employees who work for this company, which produces zillions of sweets every day, are allowed to eat sweets on the premises. Or people working in a cigarette company, there should be no smoking in the factory. If we have a no smoking policy in our factory. That's the equivalent of what BP is saying. We have a zero emissions policy on our oil rigs. Well, that is just laughable.
If people want to take part in the walk, what do they have to do?
They need to visit the website, which is www.whilelondonburns.com. That's www.whilelondonburns.com. Go there, and it's a very nice website, and what you do is you click onto the download, and you download the MP3 onto your... the file onto your MP3 player. It gives you a little map, and it also, as well, and there's a starting point in the middle of the square mile, which is at number one poultry. So you start from there and you do a walk all the way through parts of the city and you end up at a mystery location. You need £2 to help you get into this mystery location. It takes 67 minutes, as I may have mentioned, and enjoy it. And if you don't have an MP3 player and you want to borrow one, you can drop an email or phone to Platform and we can lend you one.
What's the website for Platform?
www.platformlondon.org.
Okay, and the phone number?
0207 403 3738. I know.
Thank you very much. This is Penny Quinton for Resonance FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, will all employees please report back to work? Will all employers please return to their desks? I repeat, return to your desks.
Turn right.
Ladies and gentlemen, at 1 degree of warming, we see a repeat of the 30s dust bowl in the US.